Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namasami. Our friends, I thought of offering a reflection tonight about the next contemplation, which is the contemplation of the space element internally and externally. The instruction given in this sutta is very simple. Inviting one to bring attention to the cavities inside the body, like, for example, the inside of the mouth, or any part of the body which is in a closed, empty space. And then this could be compared with, for example, the space that's enclosed within this room, or the space that's enclosed if one is in a valley enclosed by the surrounding mountains, or the space on the earth that's enclosed by the sky, or the space in the universe which is in some way enclosed by the outermost boundaries of one universe. And the instruction is observe and reflect about the space internally, and contemplating the space externally, and contemplating both with the thought, this is not me, not mine, and not myself. Although this instruction is given in a way which is exactly parallel to the first four elements that we talked about yesterday, the space element in the Buddhism is associated with the immaterial attainments. One of the immaterial contemplations is the contemplation of boundless space. And so it's maybe possible to take it in that direction. I'm not going to go very much into the Abhidhamma explanation of the immaterial contemplations and the contemplation of boundless space. It's not the training that I had, so I'm not actually competent to discuss it in those terms. But we can think about the contemplation of space in terms of the sutta, especially in terms of the Honeyball Sutta, which gives, from the sutta perspective, overall strategy of meditation in terms of taking the object of contemplation and making it increasingly more and more simplified by subtraction. So, in the Honeyball Sutta, one may leave the city and go to the forest, and one can observe that the forest is empty of city elements. So the things in the city are not present in the forest. And then one may contemplate the different things in the forest, like the trees and rocks and so forth. And then subsequently subtract the diversity of the specific things in the forest and just see the forest itself apart from all of the things that make up the forest. And then one can take, in a tree, for example, it could be characterized by has some qualities of the earth element in terms of its hardness. And then one can contemplate the earth element and then take away the earth element and just be aware of the space that's occupied by the tree, apart from the hardness of the tree. And so this is kind of a it could seem a little bit like a trick, or like a sort of a mental game, to bring the mind more and more away from being engaged with objects and dropping out different aspects of the external objects in a progressive kind of way until there's nothing left but the mind itself. But it's, to me, it's more meaningful if we look at what is the like the moral purpose of this practice. The overall theme of the Dhativibhanga Sutta is that through the developing the four determinations or the four foundations that are given in the sutta, that we come to a place where the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over us. So this conceiving, this conceit, this anxiety about the self, or this stress that we have about the self, and the constant internal psychological or psychic motion that a person is naturally involved in, where they're reaching out for some kind of becoming, to become something, or to be something, or to attain some kind of state. And so it's that pull, that draw towards becoming, that's creating the stress, that's keeping us bound up in samsara. And what we're aiming for is this state of mind where that anxiety is able to go to rest. So then one way to reduce the anxiety of becoming is by directing the mind towards objects that are not sparking off or triggering the kind of activation of the mind towards becoming. To give an example, here in this monastery, one could look around and one could notice objects in terms of things that need to be taken care of, or work that needs to be done. And if we're looking at objects in that light, we're giving a very strong fuel to our tendency towards becoming, of putting ourselves in the position of the one who has to keep on doing the work, keep on taking care of things, keep on and maintaining and improving and developing and all of this other kind of work. If we are dropping out of looking at the objects in those terms and simply looking at them in terms of the elementary qualities of the earth, water, fire and air element, then we've come like some distance away from seeing things in the in a way which would be triggering our anxiety or our agitation. And so then the mind becomes more peaceful because the mind is directed towards an object which is a peaceful object. In another sutta, sutta on the two kinds of thought, there's this very simple teaching where the Buddha is suggesting that when he was only a bodhisattva, he would assess the thoughts that occurred in terms of whether they were wholesome and beneficial or whether they were unwholesome and unbeneficial. And then he would abandon the unbeneficial thoughts and allow the mind to dwell on the beneficial thoughts. And he said that it's that which we pay attention to becomes the inclination of the mind, or you could say becomes the inclination of the heart. He says that if we get pure beneficial thoughts, one can stay there for a long time, just keeping the mind focused and fully suffused and fully permeated with beneficial thoughts, and stay there for a long time, and it would be a safe place. But eventually, the mind becomes tired of the agitation of the thoughts and wants to just allow the thoughts to drop away. So, in the meditation on the four great elements, which is there are aspects of materiality, one is not looking at objects in terms of things. We're not looking at them as chairs and robins and trees or something like that, but looking at them just in terms of the elementary qualities. But still, we're like sort of close to the materiality, close to seeing the objects as objects. So it's like we're not completely out of the danger. We're still in the realm where it's so easy to remember that the chair needs to be fixed, or I like the chair, I don't like the chair, or the chair is good for me, it's bad for me, or why did they do that to my chair, and something like that. So moving away from the four great elements into the space element is like withdrawing further away into more like a safety zone, where the mind is even more farther away from being focused on the kind of inputs that could possibly stir up this anxiety or agitation related to self-conceit or related to conceiving. So that's one way of looking at this meditation on the space element, as just a progressive step to quiet the mind. I don't really know for sure whether in this sutta it's referring to the immaterial attainment, which is beyond the four jhanas, because it's not really described in that sutta in those terms. But we can be pretty sure that this whole sutta is certainly speaking about concentration, about sama samadhi, which is typically described in terms of the four jhanas. It's said that any of the jhanas can serve as the fruitful ground for the coming to the liberating insight, the coming to our waking up. There's another sutta where it says that one could enter into the first jhana, which is characterized by seclusion, by applied thought and sustained thought, with seclusion from hindrances, are secluded from unwholesome states of mind. And within that practice, either within that practice or on emerging from that practice, one can understand that the jhana itself is conditioned, impermanent. And because of its conditioned and impermanent nature, that the jhana itself is not a refuge. It's not a final solution, even though it's a very blissful and refined state, a state that's temporarily safe from affliction. But that's not it. And then it says that it's standing on that turn towards nibbana. So from the first seeing the impermanence in the first jhana or any of the jhanas, one can then gain the nibbidhata, disenchantment with anything else except nibbana, and become willing to drop the craving and to enter towards awakening. So in that way, immaterial attainments are described in the sutta as being sort of optional, or an embellishment, or an attainment, an embellishment of the practice for the monk or the meditator who has gained great attainments, but it's not given as the fundamental part of the path for awakening. Usually the path for awakening is given in terms of including sama samadhi, which is invariably described in terms of the four jhanas that are based on form. So nevertheless, in the story of this sutta, we know that this Pukkusati, who's the student that the Buddha is speaking to, is a very talented meditator who seemed to have great natural gifts just by receiving one teaching on a gold plate that was given to him as a gift from King Bimbisara. Pukkusati was able to master a lot of meditation and become a convinced faith follower of the Buddha, and was a very strong meditator. And so then the Buddha was, in this case, trying to get him to go beyond his field of meditation and to move him towards insight. Aspect of, if we suppose that Pukkusati was able to go into the formless attainment of the contemplation of boundless space, the instruction or the reminder that the Buddha was saying was not to get any pride in having this attainment. To say, this attainment is not me, not mine, not myself. So that's another way of thinking of this particular contemplation. And another way of thinking of it, still taking it a little bit more from a moral perspective than from a technical meditation perspective, I recall when I was younger, I sat with the Thich Nhat Hanh group for a long time, and Thay very often included the teaching of knowing that there's a space within us as a way of recognizing the interdependence. So one way of seeing our space is to say that because of the existence of a space within each person, then that means that there's a interpenetration of the elements through through causation, and so a person is part of all of the other causes and conditions that surround them, and not separate from the causes and conditions. Because we're not us, if a person was metaphorically like a solid thing that was completely solid and that didn't have any space in it, then it would, in a way, the solidity would be a kind of a permanence. It would be locked into a structure, and it wouldn't have the possibility for change or for creativity. But then if there's space, then there's room for something else to happen. There's room for change, room for growth. Very often we can see how a lot of things become possible by what we give up or what we take away. That what we give up or what's taken away, that the emptiness that's left from abandoning something is a more powerful spiritual force than the benefit we get from gaining or acquiring something. When I was at the Bhavana Society, I had some control of a project to redesign a little a bungalow to be a dwelling for the bhikkhunis. And this bungalow had a front door and a back door, and I wanted to... I was trying to redesign it to be something that would have two bedrooms and a little tea area and a meditation hall. And through my own sketches or my own thinking about it, I just couldn't make it work. I couldn't make it work. And then there was a volunteer architect who then started corresponding with me on email about it. And in looking at what I was trying to do, she pointed out, well, the space has a front door and a back door, and I was trying to make the back door into the front door, into the front door into an exit from the bedrooms. And she said, well, it's a very small building, you don't need two doors. So just throw away the back door, throw away the front door, and throw away the front porch. And then the entire possibility for that little building kind of like fell together in place and became what we wanted it to be. You know, it's also a very nice transformation. So the transformation of the building was possible by taking some things that you would think would be essential, like the front porch and the front door, and throwing them away. And so the same way we can look in our life, the things that we think are essential to us, to our personality, to our character, to who we are, and think about throwing them away. contemplation of space besides the physical space within the body, one can think of it also in terms of a kind of a psychological or a metaphorical space within our personality. When you come into an empty room, it's so much more comfortable than coming into a room which is excessively stuffed with a lot of bric-a-brac or a lot of things. And so that contemplating this space in that way, we can feel a sense of openness, tranquility, and a kind of a creative possibility. I think that Thay also associates the idea of the internal space with inner freedom. And freedom to me is very closely associated with equanimity. So at any time that there's any kind of discontent with the reality as it is in the present moment, whether it be related to aversion, to desire, or to holding on to something because of identification. When those afflictive states are present, the mind is agitated. It's being compelled and pulled towards some kind of action to get rid of the negative, to gain the positive, and to hold on to that which we identify with. But when the mind is perfectly equanimous, there's not any push or pull in terms of needing to do one thing or the other in relationship to what's coming to us in our own experience. And so the contemplation of the space element would then it's sort of the sense of freedom that we associate with space element might be considered very close to the kind of a sense of freedom that we have when we develop a very strong equanimous state. And then focusing our mind on attending to the space element is also putting us in a space, in a mental space that supports equanimity, stillness, and non-agitation. And so then there's two of the aspects of mentality are like what we cognize, which is like what we're taking in, and what we intend, which is like what we're putting out at the mental level. So when we cognize tranquil, equanimous, free, beautiful state of space, then that supports making room for the intentional aspect of equanimity, the freedom, or the non-doing as an aspect of intention, it makes the space for that to grow. So it's what we intend, what we pay attention to becomes the inclination of the mind. By paying attention to the space element, then the mind will become more inclined towards peace and towards non-agitation and non-doing. And so that would be, to me, a reason why you could see that this particular contemplation is falling in the sequence of the flow of this teaching that the Blessed One is giving. So he started out with the sense basis and the grief joy, grief, and equanimity arising from the sense contact. So there's a lot of agitation there. Then he's come down to the four great elements, and there's less agitation, more freedom there. And then he's coming down again to the space element there. So putting us in a possibility of creating a lot of stillness in the mind. And then you'll see in the next contemplation after that that the Buddha does point out that there's a danger if we think that that stillness of contemplating space element or the stillness of contemplating the pure consciousness element, if you think that that's the end solution, then you've missed the goal and you'll be lost. You can be lost for a long time. But you can use that state to turn towards insight. Still at this time, we're just a few days into this retreat, and it may be fruitful to just simply continue working to use this element contemplation to try to go further and further as far as we're able to go towards steadying, calming, and stabilizing the mind. So this is what I have for you tonight. Thank you for your patient listening.
Sadhu, 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 sadhu.